Hearing Voices.
Hi, I'm Julie. I'll be able to help you look up schedules and fares for any Amtrak train. What city are you departing from?
I don't know.
Go by train. Railroad journeys.
Well, the long and the short of it is, one morning around 3 a.m., I bet Bukowski I could drive a diesel locomotive. And he takes the bet.
So all aboard with Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices, tonight at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and thank you for joining us for our online and broadcast Main Street all across North Dakota this time of day. Today, we'll start our show talking with Jennifer Harbaugh. She is the Program Director for Sources of Strength at Minot's Central Campus High School. Thanks for joining us, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me.
I was interested in talking to you about this because I went to North Dakota United. Their online website has lots of information and stuff, ndunited.org, looked at their Education Mindset podcast and found it was dealing with you, Sources of Strength. What is Sources of Strength?
Yeah, so Sources of Strength is a program that Minot Public Schools started about 3 years ago. And the idea, it kind of stemmed from a couple of places. One, it helps kind of just promote, I would say, like cultural inclusivity in the school. And so the first idea behind it is that there is a place for every student of every social group, of every walk of life. And two, it's also a program that helps support suicide prevention and any type of substance abuse. And what it does is it pairs students with adult advisors, and it kind of puts us in an atmosphere where we all just become peers together, and we're able to kind of rely on each other, and students know that these are trusted adults that they can turn to within the school if they are struggling, you know, with a variety of things, substance abuse, suicidal thoughts, or just if they need somebody to turn to and lean on.
And what made you the person to lead it?
So I've actually been with the program from its start here, and it was something that the district decided to bring into our school. And one day we had a staff meeting where they introduced this idea, and they just said, you know, if you're interested, please reach out. And I thought about it more and more, and I was like, you know, I feel like this is a program that could really initiate some type of change, and especially just like change within the culture of our learning environment. And so I reached out, I attended a couple days worth of training, and then they needed somebody to lead the program, and I just had something inside of my head that told me, you're the person for this job. And so here we are 3 years later, and I feel like we have a pretty established program at our school.
It's called Sources of Strength. We're talking with Jennifer Harbaugh, the program director at Minot Central Campus High School. And Jennifer, I did see there's a national organization, a sourcesofstrength.org online presence, and it seems to be oriented around suicide prevention, but as you've suggested, touches other issues as well. Expand on the range, if you will, of the Sources of Strength program.
Sources of Strength has this wheel that comes along with it. And so a lot of people refer to it as a wheel. Some people refer to it as a pie. And there are 8 components that we focus on within our club. And so I'll just kind of quickly run through them. They are family support, positive friends, mentors, healthy activities, generosity, spirituality, medical access, and mental health. And at our school, we focus on each one of these pieces of the wheel every month. And so we have monthly meetings where we get together. And the idea of this program is you focus more on the positive aspects in your life rather than focusing on the negative, because the positive is what we're going to, you know, get better from. And so focusing on each one of these, we have meetings, we have discussions, and then in a normal non-COVID year, we would do some type of big event within our school or within the community. And for the 2 years prior to this year, those events were really successful, but we've definitely, just like everybody else in the world, have had to learn to adapt and change to our new world at this moment in time.
How has the pandemic affected your program and the students you work with?
I would say, like, overall, like everybody, you could see that it's taken a toll on so many people and students' mental health. we're fortunate enough that we have been in school in person for the entire year, but you can just see that the change with wearing masks and having to social distance and not just being able to do things that we normally used to do has affected everyone's mental health. On top of that, you know, one of the tenets of our program is that we try to have fun. We are in a school environment where obviously academics are a priority, but our club likes to also bring in, you know, the whole individual or the whole person. And so we like to do things like one event that we love doing every year in the fall is we do a big bonfire in the green space at our school where we roast marshmallows and we play games, and it just focuses on positive friendships and building those friendships. And so not being able to do things like that, I feel like, has definitely affected the student body.
Minot's Central Campus High School has about more than 1,000 students and staff. How has the buy-in from staff and students been? How many people are involved?
Yeah, so currently we have about 85 students that are a part of Sources of Strength. And so it's a combination of 9th and 10th grade. And our program is really interesting because we always have a new grade that is entering our school, because every year 10th grade leaves, 9th grade moves up, and then 8th graders move in. And so we kind of have this constant revolving door of students, which is actually a really great thing, I think, because we're able to bring in new ideas and new perspectives. And as far as the students, I think that the ones that are involved with it, they love it. They've even brought friends to come and join the club. And then as far as staff, this year there are 5 adult advisors, including myself, that kind of help run this program. And I think the more we've become established in the school, the more buy-in there is at our school as a whole, because people can see the difference that it is making. And it offers students, excuse me, a sense of belonging. And so I think when people recognize what it is doing for just an overall student's mental health, then it helps them with their buy-in.
So you've got students coming in as 9th graders and 10th graders. That's an important transition period, I suppose, for students who are coming from a middle school or a junior high experience, going to senior high. Lots going on in their lives, lots going on physically. So it might be an ideal time to have this kind of outreach.
Exactly. It's a time where I feel like students, I mean, especially when you're coming from middle school to high school, that is a really large transition in a student's life. And we're just looking to be that support system for them, offer them the ability to make new friends with people they maybe wouldn't have befriended in a normal situation. And so I look at Sources of Strength also as just kind of that support system for those that join, or even those that bring friends that are interested within the program.
Still, the 85 students in a student body of 1,000, you'd like to probably see more involvement, because this is a behavioral health program that looks at that aspect of student life, and it's not unrelated to the educational process.
Exactly, yes. We are always looking for more students. I would say on a given year, we probably have on average about 20 additional students that join throughout the year, just because word of mouth through their friends, like, hey, oh my gosh, did you hear what we did today in Sources of Strength? And then kids will come, and we have a really short application process that basically just asks students, you know, like, why do they want to be in Sources of Strength, and do they feel like they can commit to doing events for the school and community? And if they are interested in that, then we want them, because we are an inclusive club, and if you want to be here, we want you here.
Jennifer Harbaugh is the program director for Sources of Strength at Minot Central Campus High School. Jennifer, you mentioned you were looking for a program that would promote cultural inclusivity, and I think Minot is somewhat unique compared to other places in North Dakota, because you've got an air base close by, there's turnover there, and that's a diverse population that is feeding into your school system.
Yes, I would definitely agree, and I mean, I have been at Central Campus for over 9 years, so I definitely think the Air Force adds to that, and I just feel like overall, Minot has a pretty transient population as well, with the rise of oil within our state as well. And so you see a lot of students coming from all walks of life that are coming to join this club to look for some type of sense of belonging and a place to fit in. And so I think it's a great place for people to land, even if it's for a small amount of time because they have to move.
You talked about this as a behavioral health program and The Wheel, which has these eight different themes that you might focus on in a given month. You're teaching students how to help others and how to help themselves. Am I getting that right?
Yep, that is correct. So part of one of the things that we do at our meeting is we talk about how do we help those in our lives and like what are the signs to recognize when they are struggling and where can you go for help if you need it? Because so many young kids these days struggle with various forms of mental health, but they just don't know who they can turn to or where they can go. And so our idea is if we can arm almost a tenth of the population here, and then they can spread that information out to their friends, and then their friends can spread it to their friends, hopefully we're reaching just a greater audience than just our Sources of Strength peer leaders.
The National Sources of Strength program started around the idea of suicide prevention, and I think yours followed that as well. How would you characterize suicide ideation among kids the age that you're dealing with? How big an issue is this?
I would say it's an incredibly large issue, actually. I think that it is an issue that oftentimes goes undetected by a lot of people unless a student specifically speaks out to an individual. And so I think there are specific things that teachers, club advisors, students in the school need to be almost trained to look out for to help those in need.
Ideas like this sometimes seem like they might be singing to the choir. And just let me explain what I mean there. You've got a program called Sources of Strength, and it provides a monthly meeting. And there's a little bit of status involved maybe with being a part of that and maybe being a peer leader, student, that kind of thing. Are the students who participate in Sources of Strength kids who would already be somewhat motivated to reach out to help other kids, to be interested in behavioral health? Is it the choir assembling as opposed to the people who should really be there?
I feel like that's a two-part answer. I want to say yes and no, because part of the students in Sources of Strength are those kids that you would assume to be in the program that definitely would reach out for help. But one of the great things about Sources of Strength, when it was first started in our school, it was aimed at targeting kids from all different social groups. So we're not just looking at our kids who throw themselves into academics and extracurriculars or athletics. We are looking at kids who maybe feel like they're alone or kids that are not a part of anything. And we try to target every single group within the school to represent our club so that we're, A, more inclusive of our school community, but B, that we're hopefully, in targeting these peer social groups, we're able to reach a greater number of people, a greater number of students, just with what the message that we're hopefully trying to relay to them.
Do you, these adult advisors, do you, for example, look for that kind of representation? Do you encourage certain students to get involved because you need them?
Yes, we definitely do. So obviously, since I lead this program and I'm also a language arts teacher at the school, I see students every day that I go up to and I'm like, hey, you know, do you know what Sources of Strength is in our school? I think you would be a really great fit. If you'd like more information, I'm more than happy to talk to you, or, you know, I can even pair you up with somebody who's in the program, because I think it's important to also get the student perspective of the program. Even though I try to be as approachable as I can, I'm still an adult in their eyes. And so I want them to hear it from somebody who's at their level. And usually when they hear that, they're like, this actually sounds really cool. I'm going to come to one meeting and I'm going to give it a shot. And usually when that happens, I feel like they're hooked and they continue to come.
You have some family involvement as well, don't you? When I went to the Education Mindset podcast at ndunited.org, I heard about family breakfast.
Yes. So since one of the pieces of our will is family support, we try every year, and this year is an exception, is to actually bring family members into the school environment. And so it's been pretty traditional that we do a family breakfast. where we have donuts and muffins and juice and coffee, and you get to bring your loved one. And so that's what you determine as family. It can be somebody in your immediate family, extended family, like a really great family friend, and you bring them in and they have breakfast with you, and they just kind of get to meet everybody else that is within the program and around the school. And it's next to the bonfire, probably one of my most favorite events that we do, because I don't think that, especially in high school, families come into the school enough. And so we're trying really hard to bring them in and show all the great things that we're doing, but also to have them be involved with what we're doing.
Now, as I mentioned, Sources of Strength is a national kind of initiative. Is there information sharing? Do you hear about something that a school has done that you think, oh, this might work at Minot?
Yeah, so it's actually, Sources of Strength is used in both of the middle schools here in Minot High School and the upper class high school, Magic City. And we all the time share ideas. We normally have an event that's called the Sources of Strength Peer Networking Event. It usually happens in November. This year, unfortunately, we were not able to have it. But we get together with all the area schools. So they bring in, I believe it's South Prairie and Glenburn, and every school here in Minot that hosts Sources of Strength. And it's a chance for peer leaders and adult advisors to get together and share the ideas that they've been doing at their school and what has been successful and what has not been successful. And so it's from moments like that that I feel like kids really see the difference that it's making, but then they also come back and they say, like, hey, this was a great idea. Maybe we can do this in our school, and maybe we can initiate this type of change here.
How about in North Dakota? Is this catching on? You mentioned in the Minot area, it certainly seems to be. How about elsewhere?
I'm not super familiar if it's caught on anywhere else in North Dakota. I do know that this program is based out of Bismarck, North Dakota, and I know that the Bismarck High Schools, this was something that they have had within their schools for quite some time. I don't know exactly how long, but I think it's Minot is kind of jumping on the bandwagon and joining the program because it's kind of proven to, like, it's proven to see the change within your school environment.
This might be an opportunity for those students who get involved in a program that is called Sources of Strength, and which promotes cultural inclusivity and, you know, behavioral health advocacy, if you will. Is this something that might show up on their college admission papers?
Yeah, and I definitely think that this is something that colleges would want to see, because this is a club that is different than any of the other clubs that we have at our school. And we talk about tough issues and how to help those around us, which, not that any other club doesn't do or talk about these important issues, but that is the focus of our club. And I think that it would probably be something that in putting on your admissions application would look really great.
How is Sources of Strength evaluated?
So evaluated in terms of, like, like students, staff members, what exactly do you mean by that?
However you evaluate something, how would you evaluate Sources of Strength?
Okay, so I think I would evaluate the success of our program via the participation of both students and the adult advisors and even the school and the community. I think when we have people come to our events and you see people interacting and talking with other people and going out of their comfort zone to make others feel welcome, that is when I know that we are doing our job as a program, and that's what I deem as success.
Is there any funding required to sustain this?
There currently is no funding really that we get. We get a little bit of money from the district, but our club does fundraisers, and we have applied for grants, and that is how we kind of sustain our program here, because it definitely does take money to host events and do things for the community and school, but we believe in it, and so we put our effort into raising the money for it.
Well, we learn by doing, so this is the third year of this program, as I understand it?
Correct.
What did you learn after the first year?
I learned so many things after the first year. As with anything that is new, I feel like there is always growing pains. When this was first started in our school, we definitely lacked buy-in from staff members here. I don't think that people truly understood what this program was. And so when we moved into our second year, our goal was focused on educating everybody around us, staff and students in the community, as to what we do and why we matter. And I think when we kind of shifted our attention to that, and we were able to help people see the importance of this program, that helped our program grow, just because not only did people buy into it, but then more people became interested in it and wanted to become a part of it.
Well, what do you expect to change, or how do you expect the program to adapt in its fourth year, next year?
We're hoping next year to go back to a little bit more of a normal school year. This year, we've had to adapt all of the events that we host in the school, and we haven't really been able to host any type of community events. And so all of our freshmen that are in our program have not really been able to see what Sources of Strength at Central Campus looks like. And so I think our first goal next year is to aim to go back to some type of sense of normalcy, even if that's a new normalcy for us.
So how do you present it to other students? You mentioned that you've got, you know, the people who are involved go out and give it word of mouth, but is there any kind of a school assembly where you say, this is what we do?
So there is not a school assembly, but it's the easiest way for us to get the information to students is through our daily announcements. And it usually comes at the beginning of the year where we just say, hey, if you were in it last year, come and visit with us. If you don't know what this is, if you'd like information, you can go to these people's classrooms and you can chat with them. And that right now is our best method to getting a hold of maybe new peer leaders.
So you've got about 10% of the school population involved now, and you're growing, and you want to grow some more. What's the capacity? I mean, if you got to 1,000 students, that would be a huge program.
Yeah, so I don't necessarily know how to answer what is the capacity, because as the students grow, the amount of adult advisors has to grow. And I think that if it just keeps getting larger, then as a school, we just have to adapt and welcome those changes and figure out how do we do that? Because at 85, we are still actually quite a large club. And so getting together during the school day in terms of space and things like that sometimes tends to be difficult, because a lot of our meetings, we are playing games and we're being active and we're moving around and laughing. So we would have to take that one as it came.
Do you have any interaction with Minot State University? They train teachers there, after all. Is this something that they're interested in too?
We have not currently had any interaction with Minot State University, but it would definitely be something I think that we would be interested in.
Is there anything else about Sources of Strength that we haven't touched on that you think needs to be talked about?
I just think that people need to know that Sources of Strength is an important program within the schools, because not only does it focus on a student's like mental health, but it focuses on their emotional health as well. And when you combine that with the schooling environment, which is kind of like your academic health, it kind of is helping us reach students as like that whole individual. And without this program, I think that there would be students who feel like they do not have a place in this school.
Jennifer Harbaugh is Program Director for Sources of Strength at Minot Central Campus High School. You can find out more information at ndunited.org under the Education Mindset podcast, or online from sourcesofstrength.org. Jennifer, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up on Main Street, Eliza Blue shares a postcard from the prairie, and horticulturist Ron Smith talks about dry weather and gardening. First, the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. A group calling itself Protect North Dakota's Constitution has submitted a proposed state constitutional amendment that would limit future initiated constitutional amendments to a single subject. The measure would also require a 60% vote for such a measure to pass. Jeffrey Zarling of Williston is co-chair of the group. He says over the past several years, measures have passed that include multiple subjects and were funded by outside interests.
We believe our measure will improve transparency of future measures and will ensure initiatives added to the Constitution will be well-conceived and overwhelmingly supported by North Dakotans.
Zarling says if the wording of the group's proposal is approved by the Secretary of State, the group has a year to collect the necessary signatures. He says with the new census figures coming out this fall, it likely will take between 35,000 and 40,000 signatures to get the measure on the ballot.
PNDC intends to use a combination of organic and paid signature gatherers to gain the necessary signatures.
Zarling says it isn't the group's intent to stop constitutional initiatives, but he says it should be a little more difficult to amend the state's constitution. A fire that occurred at the former Mid-America Steel building in Fargo on Sunday has been ruled as intentionally set. This is the second fire that has occurred at that location believed to be arson. The first fire took place on March 22nd. The Fargo Fire Department said in a statement they are continuing to work with Fargo police to determine who is responsible for setting the fires. Fargo police is asking for public assistance in regard to the incident. Anyone with any information could call the investigations unit at 701-241-1405 or text your tip and keyword Fargo PD to 847-411. No further information is being released at this time. And in the Senate's version of the budget for human services, $3 million has been set aside to hire a consultant to look at a new state hospital in Jamestown.
The old state hospital is old.
Bismarck Republican Senator Dick Dever.
The state hospital at one time had 3,000 residents. We're looking at building a new state hospital that would have 75 to 100 beds.
Dever says most people are served in community-based settings.
So the new state hospital would create greater efficiencies in a smaller footprint, fewer FTEs, and provide the necessary services for those people who need the acute care provided in a new state hospital.
Governor Burgum had proposed building a new state hospital in his bonding proposal. The House had set aside $300,000 for a study. Dever says,
we would like to see it go further than just a decision whether we should build it, but really what it would look like and what the cost would be, what would be the best way to propose it.
Dever says this will be worked out in a conference committee. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Basin Electric Power Cooperative, headquartered in Bismarck, serving 3 million consumers in 9 states with electricity from wind, natural gas, coal, hydro, and nuclear.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Eliza Blue is a South Dakota writer and musician. She pens a weekly column that appears in several publications, and she produces a radio and podcast feature called Postcards from the Prairie that we feature on Main Street. This postcard is about spring birds.
Yesterday, the robins returned to our yard. We saw them through the living room window on the western side of the house, a small flock of them flitting between the branches of the tallest ash in the tree break. It was a damp, gray day, and they were far enough away that it was difficult to make out the burnt orange feathers of their breasts, but the plump curves of their bellies and the stuttered swoop of their flight was unmistakable after watching a winter's worth of sparrows. "Let's take the binoculars upstairs and see if we are right," I told the kids, and we tromped up to look. I threw open the window and the cacophony of robin song filled the room even before we spotted the telltale coloration through the binoculars' lenses. The kids, satisfied, went back down to their Lego table, where they'd been working on a water park that included a hot dog stand and 9 water slides. I stayed to marvel. "Hello, friends," I called out the window. In 2018, Robert McFarlane and Jackie Morris created a children's picture book called The Lost Words. The impetus of the book was the editing of the Oxford Junior Dictionary, which had removed many words used to describe the natural world. Some of them relatively common words, such as acorn, fern, dandelion, gray seal, otter, and kingfisher. The editing body of the OED determined that the excised words were of increasingly less importance to the modern child, and removing them made room for newer words with greater relevance like blog, broadband, database, and voicemail. The editors argued they couldn't include everything, but McFarlane explained what was being lost this way. "We find it hard to love what we cannot give name to, and what we do not love, we will not save." Today, the weather is warm and bright. The robins that gathered beneath the chilly clouds yesterday are scattered across the yard now. We hear them calling from every direction. A giant plume of red-winged blackbirds swoop down to occupy the tall ash, their chorus whistles and trills even louder than the robins' chatter. They move on quickly, though, our tree break merely a short respite in their journey. In a tree by the patio, we see a downy woodpecker skipping along the bark, and then a single goose honks past, so low to the ground we could practically reach up and brush our fingertips over her feathers. "Birds, birds everywhere," I tell the kids, and they smile at me before returning to draw with chalk on the cement. The one bird we don't hear is the meadowlark, whose bright song is usually how Western Dakotans know that spring has arrived. Their voice is unavoidably ubiquitous once the weather warms. In total, we've lost nearly 3 billion American birds since the 1970s, and the meadowlark population in particular has seen a precipitous decline in the last decade, though their numbers in our region are still strong, or have been. "Where are the meadowlarks?" I whisper aloud, suddenly worried. Evening begins to settle around us. The shadows are long and stark across the first brushes of green, rising softly from the dusty field. The sun, resting just above the horizon, is pure gold. I go out for a run and I am just about to turn back when I hear it. Two long notes followed by a dizzying avalanche of trills. It's a meadowlark. We live surrounded on all sides by a wilderness of grass. Land that, though changed, still looks surprisingly similar to the way it did a millennia ago. And yet my children, children of the prairie winds and grasses, would rather listen to birdsong on YouTube than out in the pasture. Unlike the editors of the OED, I've tried to give them words for both the world of human creation and the world in which humans are simply one voice in a marvelous and ancient symphony. But I fear McFarlane may be wrong. What if the things we name and love, we still don't love enough to save? Perhaps it's time to stop saying those names quietly. Perhaps it is time to start shouting, lest we discover that what we've lost for good.
Postcards from the Prairie, essayist and performer Eliza Blue. She lives in rural South Dakota with her husband and two children, where she practices regenerative agriculture and raises sheep for their wool and grass-fed cattle. You can find out more at elizablue.net. Time now for horticulturist Ron Smith, birds Ron, and Ashley Thornburg for a discussion about, you know, getting ready for the growing season, even though it's snowing in some places.
Ron, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome, Ashley and Doug. Yes, the snow is Mother Nature's micro-irrigation technique of getting water into our soil without wash-off or flooding. And, you know, it's one of those things where when we're in drought, we pray and we ask for rain, 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 give us rain. And then when it does come, it comes in tidal waves of rain, way too much. And when we're into too much rain, we say, stop the rain. Let's get rid of the rain. Then we go back into drought. And I've lived in North Dakota for over 35 years, and I've seen this shifting very, very widely from 1 year to, my gosh, are we going to be flooded out of here every year? And the following year, it's bone dry, you know, just like we started coming into this spring season here. And it's ironic, you know, that I was worried about the lack of moisture when my wife and I were digging in our garden this past weekend, and we were kicking up dust and everything else. We actually wore our masks outside to keep from getting the dust into our nostrils and into our lungs. And then, you know, bingo, we got rain. And it's wonderful. It's really a wonderful thing to have. The rain that we are having now in the form of snow, which is going to melt gradually and soak into that upper ground, making the soil absolutely perfect for germinating seeds and young transplants to be set into the soil.
It's what we're used to this time of year. That is the occasional rain, the occasional snow. We're in this transition period. But much of North Dakota is in a deep and profound drought. So their growing season doesn't look quite as promising, at least now.
Yeah, it doesn't. And that's very frustrating. You know, you talk about it being here, and I'm sure the folks that are listening out in the western part of the state are wondering why is Fargo getting such a good break on this? Well, that's just the way the finger of luck turns on the wheel. You might bang for it later on. To try to minimize the impact of drought, they need to probably look at the plantings that they have out there. What are the youngest plants that they put in, the ones they put in last fall, last spring, whether they're woody plants or herbaceous plants, should probably be the first ones to receive some water. And just water around the base of the plant as you see it emerging or starting to green up. Don't worry about your lawn quite yet. That's probably the last thing that you'd want to worry about watering, and generally people want to get out there and water their lawn right away, but let that sit for a while. So work on your recent plants, transplants, the ones that you put in last fall, last spring, or are going to be planting this spring. Make sure they get adequate water, and if the soil is very dry when you're going to go ahead and plant it, pre-water the hole that you're going to be putting the plant in so that the roots, when they start to strike out with new growth, they'll have something to grow to, and that is a moist soil outside of the little planting hole that you put in. So that should do it. And then when you get into your lawn, one of the first things you can do is don't over-fertilize, but fertilize normally. Don't put it on too heavily because you don't want to get too much vegetative growth, too much vertical growth. But some fertilization, once the grass has started to green up, will be great. And then when you mow your lawn, make sure your mower at 3 inch, make sure your mower blade is sharp. I assume by now most people have their mowers and tuned up and ready to go. And then mow and let the clippings fall. I know that goes against the grain of a lot of people, my wife included. she wants the clippings collected. So we make a pretty good compromise. We collect most of our clippings, but at times when it's really bad, I can talk her into letting the clippings fall, and they'll cool the soil and cool the crowns of the grass plant and not have to require as much water. When you do water your lawn, water in the early morning hours, and then water only as much as needed. Don't allow any runoff. Don't allow any water. If you're talking about an automatic sprinkling system or a movable sprinkling system, don't water the concrete. It's not going to do the plants any good, and that's wasted water. In some parts of the country, you could get fined for allowing the water to go on your concrete. So that takes care of it, of the lawn. And as far as fertilization goes, if we get into the summer and we're still in drought, for heaven's sakes, don't fertilize around the 4th of July, middle of July. Wait until the end of August or the beginning of September to go ahead and do your next fertilization. Now, I know I'm talking too much about grass, and that's fine. I'm going to talk a little bit now about some of the more drought-hardy plants that you can plant. And even here in the eastern part of the state, we can plant drought-hardy plants even if we have adequate moisture right now. Things like daylilies would be fantastic. You have the coneflower, the prairie coneflower, which is good, very tolerant of dry conditions. And then nice little plants that make good ground covers, sedum. There's a whole series of sedum species that you can go ahead and use. Salvia, which is a wonderful perennial, a herbaceous perennial that can be used and is very drought tolerant and comes back every year. Liatris is another good one. Certainly Russian sage, just about everybody in North Dakota that recognizes a growing plant knows what Russian sage is. It's adapted very well to our particular environment. And a thing called catmint and yarrow. And I want to kind of warn you on the last two, catmint and yarrow. They have a voracious appetite for space, and so they'll have a tendency to move and take over the area. So be very, very careful as to where you put those. And, watch out that you don't have to end up breaking your back in a couple of years to go ahead and dig them out and move them. I'd also like to relate a particular experience of my own. About 4 years ago, I thought, I'm going to go ahead and plant the Joe Pye weed. And so I visited our local garden center here in Fargo, talked to them about that. And, it grows nicely and grows beautifully. And I thought, because I read about how it attracts hummingbirds and bees and everything else and butterflies. And so I thought, I'm going to plant a half a dozen of these Joe Pye weeds. And I was told they get tall, over 6 feet tall. And so I planted them the first year. They got up to 6 feet, and that was very nice. The second year, more than 6 feet, and they took up the space that I had allotted to them and then started growing into and around or spreading into and around the neighboring area, which was our neighbor's property. So I did a lot of trimming. And then the last year, it was just too much. And so as much as I love the fact that they attracted butterflies galore this last fall, I'm making a major decision, and I'm going to go ahead and, we already took the crowns out, which is a heck of a job, because they have a very tenacious root system, and the root ball that we could get it reduced down to weighed around between 40 and 50 pounds. So it took my wife and I lugging these things, putting them into a can and getting them over to recycling. So if you want to fall in love with the Joe Pye weed and plant it, it will grow. I promise you it will grow. But make sure you give it room to go ahead and spread, not by the roots, but by this foliage, the extensive aerial part of the plant. Mm-hmm. It prunes easily. It has a hollow stem, so it's not going to be causing any physical damage. It's just that it kind of takes over the place. It spoiled the rest of the garden in that area for us. We couldn't grow anything else to our satisfaction. Now we have the space, and what I'm going to replace it with is bee balm, Monarda. It's a wonderful plant for attracting butterflies and hummingbirds. And now, I guess I've talked too much. Shut up and listen to
Ron,
questions you might have or comments.
This time of year, I know, is hard on a lot of people. The first times it really starts to get nice out and you want to go out and do everything just to be outside and to get your hands in the dirt. And it's really easy to overdo yard work. And I did have a couple neighbors be nice enough to tell me, you don't really want to be picking up the leaves right now because certain bees and other pollinators and creatures are still making nests under those leaves and staying warm. So what is kind of the metric that you're looking for to when you can get that lawn to looking like you're not just totally neglecting it, but want to keep those pollinator and other creatures, alive?
Okay, let me ask you a question, Ashley. Are you going to perform open heart surgery on your lawn? Of course not. No. Okay. As gung-ho, and I'm married to a very gung-ho woman, okay, and my wife, Betsy, she's a lovely lady, but she's very gung-ho, and when we clean up our yard, we do a good job. But as much as we clean it up, there's still plenty of leaves around for the birds to go ahead and make nests with. So, and we don't leave them there deliberately. They are just there unintentionally because we just can't get to all the leaves where they are. And so I wouldn't worry about it too much unless you're going to go around your property with a vacuum cleaner and, clean up every speck of looking.
Well, I do have one of those husbands who is like, if you're going to do it, do it. So I think he would go and get four different leaf suckers and, do a test comparison of the different power tools. So
why don't we let your husband and my wife work together one time in the yard?
Hey, there we go. You and I can have
crazy.
Some wine.
Yeah, right. Have some wine and cheese and watch them go at it.
I like this idea.
Yeah.
Ron, you heard Eliza Blue talk about those harbingers of spring, the birds, the robin and the meadowlark, that kind of thing. And we've had Chuck Lura, the the creative voice behind Natural North Dakota on Prairie Public, talk about how woodpeckers can indicate there's a problem with your tree because they're looking for, you know, the emerald ash borer or maybe something, some other pest. Do you encourage certain kinds of birds to come into your yard? Do you have bird houses? Do you look for certain kinds of bird activity that is as good for, you know, your lawn and garden?
Well, we do what we can. We, first of all, we get messless seed, the different seed mixes that promise not to leave any messes, and they offer a bouquet of seeds for them, a banquet, I should say, of seeds for them, not a bouquet, a banquet of seeds for these birds to go ahead and enjoy. And then we don't have a mess to go ahead and clean up of the seed husks or seed shells. And yes, we do encourage woodpeckers because they're beautiful birds. And if they're picking on the barks of the trees, that's fine. They can get the larvae that are maybe starting to get started there in the crevices of the bark or working on the cambium beneath the bark. That's fine with us. But my wife puts up these feeders that she makes with peanut butter. She goes out and buys the cheapest peanut butter she can, picks up her own suet mix and with peanut butter, spoils the daylights out of them. And they're welcome to work on the trees because they keep any plant destructive larvae under the bark from getting a permanent home there and doing damage on our trees. Just a quick aside, I have a cut leaf weaving birch in my front yard that when I planted it 35 years ago, I was told by the horticulturist that was in there that I was working with at the time, and he's long since passed on, and I'm not even going to mention his name, but he said, that tree will be dead in 2 to 5 years. And that was 35 years ago, actually 36 years this coming spring. So it's still there. It's growing healthy in a very healthy way. And it's a beautiful feature tree for our property and for our neighborhood.
Well, we check in with our horticulturist, Ron Smith, as often as we need to during the greening up season and the growing season beyond. Ron, it's always a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I enjoy talking with both of you.
You can always send a message to mainstreet@prairiepublic.org to get a question asked.
Dakota Datebook is next.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
Support for Dakota Datebook is provided by Books on Broadway and Dakota Soda and Coffee Company of Williston, featuring coffees and a wide variety of books for children and adults. Books on Broadway, the independent bookstore for independent minds.
This is Dakota Datebook for April 13th. Banner newspaper headlines across the nation announced the sudden death of President Franklin D. Roosevelt on this date in 1945. The country's only four-term commander-in-chief passed away from a massive cerebral hemorrhage, launching Vice President Harry Truman into the presidency. Readers of the Fargo Forum learned that Truman received the news in a phone call to his office. The story said, his face went gray with the news of President Roosevelt's death. He seemed agitated. Jamming his hat over his head, he rushed out. An office staffer said, he just announced, I'm going to the White House. Then he was through the door like a flash. Inside that same issue of the paper was the now familiar war news, reporting on the battle casualties of local and regional military personnel. 7 North Dakota men were listed as dead, with 11 wounded, 2 missing, and 1 confirmed as a prisoner of the Germans. The newspaper's inside sections included news that the Nazis lost 989 planes in 6 days. In one episode, 11 American Thunderbolt pilots strafed 2 airfields where hundreds of planes with no fuel were parked. They destroyed 74 planes and 18 others were damaged. But not all the news was about death and destruction. Fargo Entertainment, on this date in 1945, included Laurel and Hardy in the movie Nothing But Trouble at the Grand Theater, with the ticket price of 30 cents. Also showing was I'll Be Seeing You with Joseph Cotten, Ginger Rogers, and Shirley Temple in her first really grown-up glamour role. Joseph Cotten was also featured at the Park Theater, starring with Teresa Wright in Alfred Hitchcock's thriller Shadow of a Doubt. The entertainment at the park also included a Lil Abner cartoon and a news serial. Such were the times on this date in 1945. Today's Dakota Datebook is written by Steve Stark. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
The goal for the Pulse is to make information that's complicated and dense accessible and fun for a lot of people.
That's Mike and Scott, host of health and science show The Pulse, which you can hear every Thursday night at 8 Central on Prairie Public.
I interviewed somebody who is trying to bring vaccines to developing countries, and he's basically genetically modifying lettuce seeds, so the lettuce plant would have the polio vaccine inside of it, and then you could dry the plant, pulverize it, and ship it out. That would take care of a lot of the cold chain problem. That's often an issue when you're trying to bring vaccines that need to be refrigerated into developing countries. So he was just a very inspiring person. Science is being questioned right now, and it certainly does feel like science is coming under attack in a new way. But science is always being questioned, and so it should. Questioning things and always coming up with new information is the very essence of science. We are just trying to give people answers to some basic questions and to cut through some of this dense language that always seems to surround healthcare. And it is always a contentious topic, but the more we can have a conversation about it and the more we can focus in on the human aspects of it and how it affects people, the more we can bring it down to that level.
Join Mike and Scott for The Pulse, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain, on member-supported Prairie Public.
On the same day that an angry mob stormed the U.S. Capitol, two bombs were found blocks apart at the headquarters of the Republican and Democratic National Committees.
What I think would be accurate to say, given the information we have, is this is a very hazardous device that could kill people.
What was the motive, and why are the suspects not in custody yet? On the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
Thank you for joining us for Main Street. As we broadcast, we stream online at prairiepublic.org. After the broadcast or stream, you can find any Main Street show at the same place, prairiepublic.org. Wednesday on our show, the expansion of the child tax credit in the American Rescue Plan is projected to decrease child poverty by 40% and to especially benefit rural areas where the poverty rate is often higher. Food insecurity and poverty are closely linked, and we'll discuss the potential with Karen Ahrens of Hunger Free North Dakota. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Wednesday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.